Begin the current daf, except this Kedushin daf nun ches, begin 9 lines down for the top of the Yomid. The Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf, and that is we had been elucidating our Mishnah that spoke about different items if a man utilizes to Mekadosh HaIsha, it's not going to create a Kedushin, because they are Isur Hana, they're prohibited to have any benefit from it, and therefore they have no monetary value, can't utilize it for anything, and hence that will not create a Kedushin. Now, specifically, one of the items was the last item mentioned in the Mishnah, which we had finished discussing on the top of this Amid, regarding the halacha of chulin shenishchatu bazar, regarding unconsecrated animals which were slaughtered in the courtyard, which are forbidden, that not only are you not allowed to do that, and there's isra achila, but there's even an isra hana, hence it will not create a kedushin. Now, regarding these halachas, the Gemara tells us, ishkachinu Mar Yehuda encountered l'Rab Yosef, l'Rab Shmuel, who were berei de Rabba Bar Bachana, the sons of Rabba Bar Bachana. They were by the entryway of the house of Rabba. Amlahu, he said to them, he says, I have a question. Tanya, we'll learn the Brai says as follows. Hamekadosh bepetach hamor, if someone creates a kedushin with a petach hamor, which is the firstborn donkey, where he refuses to give it to the kayin, they exchange for the seh, and instead they have to chop off the head of that donkey. Or bebasav chalav, if let's say he engages a woman with a forbidden mixture of meat and dairy. Or bechulin shenishchatu ba'azara, regarding chulin which was slaughtered in the courtyard. Rabbi Shimon Oimer Mikudeshes, regarding all these three halachas, he's not like the halacha of our Mishnah. He says, actually, it will be a Kedushin. Now, the reason is because Petach Hamor, what we're talking about over here, is regarding, as we mentioned in the previous daf, Rabbi Shimon goes according to his opinion when they're still alive, he disputes Rabbi Yehuda, and he says, actually, permitted to have Ana. Meaning, we had said that he could be like the Tana of our Mishnah if it's talking about that it's already was Hadarifa, if already decapitated, then yes, he agrees it's going to be Asabana. But here, in regard to this Braisa, where he says you could create a Kedushin with a Petach Hamor, means when they're still alive, and he holds then there's a heter of Hana for that. Moreover, regarding the halach of Basa B'chala, we also said in the previous daf, Rabbi Shimon's opinion is not like the halach of our Mishnah, and that he holds that there is a heter Hana. Regarding Basa B'chala, you're just not allowed to eat it, but he holds that you could have a heter Hana, therefore you could create Kedushin, you can utilize it for something, you could feed animal or something else. So, and as we'll shortly see, this seemingly the same thing regarding Chulin Shanishch the Bazar, he also holds it's not an Issur D'oraisa of Hana, and therefore, biblically, it does have a Hatana, and that's why you can be Mekadosh HaIsha with one of these three things. V'chacham Aimim in Mekadeshes, however, the sages disagree, as in our Mishnah. They hold that all these three things don't have a Hatana, and therefore will not create Kedushin. So asks Mar Yehuda to these two sons of Rabbi, he says, Alma, so we see, Chulin shenishchatu bazar l'Rabbi Shimon, that obviously, according to Rabbi Shimon, regarding chulin which was slaughtered in the courtyard, lav d'oraisa, that is not a biblical halacha, in other words, not regarding its slaughtering and not regarding the isser of hana, in other words, in contrast to what we had said in the previous daf coming up to the top of this amit, where we had interpreted regarding ki yirchak mimcha hamakim, where Abaye had seemingly brought for the Tana of our Mishnah a biblical source for the halacha of chulin shenishchatu bazar, that is isser hana. Obviously, Rabbi Shimon holds that you could be Mekadosh HaIsha with Chulin Shenishchatu the Bazar, does not hold to that drasha. Rather, he holds the Isser, the prohibition of slaughtering Chulin in the courtyard, is not biblical. It's actually a rabbinic halacha. Why? Because maybe people are going to come to say that regarding Kachim, which became Pasul, after their slaughtering, they're going to see this Chulin, which was slaughtered there. They're not going to know it's Chulin. They're going to think, oh, why aren't they taking the blood and throwing it on the Mizbeach? Must be that it's kachim that became pasul, and if it's pasul, so they're not going to continue doing the avoida of throwing the blood on the mizbeach. Now, if they're going to assume that that's what it is, and they're going to see the person getting hana from it, they're going to come to have hana from kachim that became pasul where the blood wasn't thrown on the mizbeach, which is prohibited because the only heter of kachim is when after, because it's isra me'ila, is only when the blood is thrown on the mizbeach. That creates a heter now, which you can utilize it now. But if it was kachim shenifslu where the blood was not thrown on the mizbeach, it's actually isra hana. But if they're going to see people slaughtering and not throwing the blood, they're going to think it is kachim shenifslu, and they're going to see you having hana. So that's where Reb Shimon, that's where he learns out the halach of chulin shenishchatu bazar, that there's an isser of having hana from it, is only from a rabbinic law. But biblically, of course, there's hana to it. And therefore, that's why he says that if you mekadosh a woman with it, it is going to be a valid kedushin biblically. That's what the Mar Yehuda had asked to them. So seemingly, Reb Shimon holds it's not biblical. But that he says verminu, but there's a contradiction from this from a Mishnah in Masechtas Temura. Reb Shimon Oimer, against the same Reb Shimon, he says, chulin shenishchatu bazar yisrufu, regarding unconsecrated produce which is slaughtered in the courtyard, has to be burnt. And v'chin chaya should nishuk tobazar asutu for a wild animal, which also is not brought as a carbon, for slaughtered in the courtyard, it has to be burnt. Now, when it says it has to be burnt, it's saying that it's not enough just to bury it. Now, so on that is what Mar Yehuda is asking, that obviously you see that Rebbe Shimon holds halacha of chulin shel nishuk tobazara is, must be biblical, and not like how it's inferred from the other halacha, from this braisa, that it's only rabbinic, as Rashi explains. Because if it was rabbinic, would we be so stringent to require that if it was slaughtered in the Azara, that it has to be burnt? In other words, although let's say by a behema, by a domesticated animal, we're there, yes, as we said before, that if it's rabbinic, we would have to be concerned that maybe people will confuse it with psuli hamakdashin. That we don't want people to think, A, first of all, you're not allowed to have anah from it. Moreover, what happens by psuli hamakdashin, that it has to be burnt. Now, if you're going to bury it, people are going to think, oh, what was that? That was psuli hamakdashin, right? Obviously, what else is it? Because they didn't throw the blood, and then they just buried it. Oh, they're going to think you could bury it. But that's not the halacha. So not to confuse the chulin, shenishuk lebazara, they said, okay, we understand you would say you have to burn it rabbinically, so that they shouldn't confuse it and think that kachem shenifsilu, that became invalidated, could be enough with burying, and actually has to be burned. But the proof is from the next case, where he speaks about a chaya, a wild animal. And that is, if you say the primary prohibition that we're talking about over here, the fact that it was slaughtered in the Azar, is not biblical, then why would you say that if it's a wild animal, that it has to be burnt? But there's no way to confuse it with kachem, because everyone knows that you cannot bring a carbon from a chaya, from a wild animal, it has to be from a behemoth, from a domesticated animal. So why would it be burnt? And the truth is, even regarding the burial. Now, obviously, says Mar Yehuda, that it must be that the prohibition, according to Rabbi Shimon, is biblical. Now, since the Isser of the Chulin, which was slaughtered in the Azar, is biblical, so therefore you could say now that rabbinically, you have to go ahead and burn it by a domesticated animal, because then you might come to say, regarding Kachem Shenifsalu, you would also confuse it and think that it's going to be enough with burial, but the Torah really says it has to be burnt. Now, by a wild animal, now you could understand at least why they would make the gezer, because we don't want to differentiate in the biblical halacha of chulin shenishchutu ba'azara, where the sages said, okay, regarding this biblical halacha, although it does not require to be burnt, but we're requiring this isra of chulin shenishchutu ba'azara to be burnt, at least by behema, because of the confusion which kachem shenifsalu. So not to differentiate, we would say also the chaya needs to go ahead, since it's also the biblical halacha, to be burnt. But if you say it's rabbinic, so why would we say the whole Isser is rabbinic? The whole prohibition of the Chulin Shel Nishuk Ba'Azara is rabbinic. So, okay, you would say, okay, behema, fine, I can understand it have to be burnt, although the whole Isser is rabbinic, but not to confuse the Kachem Shel Nifsilu. But regarding Chaya, what would be the understanding of at all comparing it to Kachem Shel Nifsilu that you would have to go ahead and burn it, where there's no confusion there whatsoever, and it has nothing in common with the behema shenishchata, because behema and chaya, there is no biblical isra at all if you're saying it's rabbinic of shenishchatu bazar. And therefore, why would we say that you have to burn it? Obviously, you see that he holds it's biblical. That contradicts the brisa that we brought down, which holds that obviously holds it's rabbinic. Because if it was biblical, then he wouldn't hold that it's going to create a kedushin with a woman. So that was the question he asked him. How do we understand? There seems to be a contradiction in Reb Shimon's opinion. If he holds chulin shel nishuk ba'azara is rabbinic, as it seems like from the brisa, that's what's going to create a kedushin on the biblical level. Whereas from this Mishnah in Temur, it sounds like he holds that it's biblical. So the Gemara tells the Ishtuku. They were silent. They didn't answer his question. Also, the Kamei de Rabba. They came in front of Rabba, whose doorway they were by. So Amalahu, he said to them, Palga, this is a reference to Mar Yehuda, who had asked a question, who he's someone that provokes. He likes disputing, he likes creating difficulties for his colleagues. He says, Ukmintche, he got you. In other words, he tricked you, because it's actually not a difficulty. Hachamai Iskina, what are we talking about over here, where Reb Shimon says that Mikudeshes, that in the braisa which he had asked, it sounds like that he holds, oh, it's not biblical, where we prove from Temur, it's obviously holds it's biblical, says Rabba, no, he does hold it's biblical. Now, if it's biblical, then how does he hold the chulin shel nishuk ba'azara you're going to be able to do a kedushin with if biblically it has an isra hanah? That case, he says, is tumah kegoyin shenishchata v'nimtzis treifa. That's a specific type of a case over there. Is where it was slaughtered and it turns out that the chulin that was slaughtered in the Azar was a treif or had a mortal defect. Now, Reb Shimon l'tameh, and therefore Reb Shimon is going according to his opinion mentioned elsewhere. The Tanakh learned the Braisa. Hashreichet es ha-treifa. If someone slaughters an animal with a mortal defect, in other words, one that's recognizable, Or, let's say you slaughtered and you didn't know, it wasn't recognizable, and turns out that it was a trefa. And zevezel chulin bazar, now either one of these cases that we're talking about, whether it was always known that it was a trefa or it turns out it was a trefa, but either way, they're both that you slaughtered this animal, which was chulin in the azara. Rabbi Shimon mata b'hanah. Rabbi Shimon says it's permitted to have anah from it. The Chacham says it's forbidden. Now the reason for this is because although he holds that chulin shel nishchu bazar is biblical, as we see from the Mishnah Masechtas Temura, but Rabbi Shimon has mentioned many times in Shas, once is regarding the halacha of kisra adam, as mentioned in Masechtas Chulin. Once is regarding the isra of oisav es beno, you know, the slaughter an animal and its child. It says over there in Chulin daf pei. Also regarding tashlum abav v'chamisha, which is regarding the isra of dal v'hei, when you steal something and then you sell it or slaughter it, as the Gemara in Baba Kama ayin alf says. Which basically the principle that he talks about is what's known as shchita she'in ru la'achila. Regarding a slaughtering, which will not allow this thing to be eaten, he holds loish mashchit, although you do the act of slaughtering, but since the effect of it, which is to permit it to be eaten, is not going to take effect, so we don't call it, quote, slaughtering. And therefore, any liability or prohibition that comes through shchita will not take effect on this thing. So therefore, says the Gemara, so this is what Rabbi was telling them, where this issa of the schulen, that what creates the issa in the chulen shanishk the bazar? It's the act of the shchita. But here it's not a shchita because it's a trefa. Shchita only is something to permit something to be eaten. If it has a mortal defect, it's not kosher. You can't go ahead and eat it. And therefore, said Rabbah, it's not a difficulty. As we see in the Mishnah Masechtas Temura, he agrees to the Tana of our Mishnah, in principle, that it is a biblical halacha, and therefore there is an isra anah, and you would not be able to mekadesh a woman. That price that says that you could be mekadesh a woman, chulin shel nishchu bazar, is talking about specifically when it was found to be a trefa. If it was a trefa, then he doesn't consider it an act of shchita. And since it wasn't nishchat, so you didn't slaughter chul nazar, it wasn't, quote, slaughtering, and therefore he holds that it's not going to be usr, and that's why he can mekadesh isha, but again, in general, he agrees to the principle of our Mishnah. Next thing the Mishnah concluded with was that regarding all these items, although they're usr ba'anah and you cannot be mekadesh isha, but if machran, bekiddush b'dmein, if you sell this item, the arla, the klai karam, all these different things, and you get money for it, and then you take the money and you mekadesh a woman, then mekadeshes, then she'll be against. So the Gemara says, Menolam, where do we know this from? That it doesn't have what's called tfisas damim. And that is the sanctity, which is you're essentially deconsecrating. In other words, you're taking the isra hanah, and you're transferring onto money, because you had something, you gave it to someone else, now you got money in place of that. How do we know that the money doesn't take that isra hanah, and that the item retains its isra wherever it is? So they got, look, the one who bought it from you, now he has that isra hanah, but the money that you have is kosher money. How do we know that? So the Gemara says, Mindigali Rachmana b'avaydes kachav. From the fact that the Torah reveals to us regarding idols, the Pasuk says in Devarim, v'yisachem kamayu, that it should be for you something that's forbidden like it. In other words, you will be like the Avodah Zarah. That what does that mean? Just like that's forbidden, so too you're going to have, which is kol shatam ahayehem mena. What does it mean you're going to be? Whatever you'll make out of the Avodah Zarah, which means to say if you sell it, whatever you get out of it, harehu kamayhu, will be just like the Avodah Zarah, like the idol itself. Now, so that means to say that when you take a Avodah Zarah and you sell it, so the money will have that same isra anah, whatever happens from it. But mechlal the chol yisum shebeter sharu. The inference, however, is that it's only by Avodah Zarah that v'yisachem kamayu. But every other isra in the Torah, even isra anah, will not have the transfer to the money, and the money will be kosher money, and you could have anah from it. Nothing more, but why? V'nelef mina. Why don't you learn out from Avodah Zarah? How do you know it's just by Avodah Zarah? Maybe that sets the precedent. And then you learn out from that, just like there, it's isra anah, and it transfers to the money. Maybe every isra anah. So the Gemara says, no, mishum dahav avodis kechav and b'shviyas shnei ksum habom keechad, because the prohibition of idols and the shmita produce are two psukim saying the same idea. And v'chol shnei ksum habom keechad, im alam, then the principle is, whenever you have two psukim, when you could have had one pasuk, and instead you have two psukim saying it, comes to say that you cannot learn from there. And it must be saying that whenever it says it, it would have to say it again, and that's why it doesn't say it one time, to say only these are the exceptions, but in general, you're not going to have the transfer of the Isser to the money. Where do we see them both saying the same idea? So, Avodis Kechavim Hadda Amar. Regarding the idol, we just said that that's in the Pasuk of Yisachem Kamayu. Now, Shvi is Mahi, what's the source that Shemitah produce that the monies get the same sanctity and thus the limitations of the prohibition as the Shemitah produce itself? Because the Pasuk says, it says, Yevil, it's Yevil, which we compare the halachas of Shemitah and Yovel, Kodesh Tiyolachem, that it should be holy for you. Now, we're comparing it to Kodshim, to Kodesh. Now, Ma Kodesh Tevis is Damav, just like we're going in Kodshim, where when you take a carbon and you sell it to someone else, now then you deconsecrate it, the sanctity of the animal gets released and it gets transferred to the money. Avshviyas Tefes is the mouse. That's what the Pasi is telling, that the Shemitah produce too, that its sanctity of the produce takes possession on the money that you're getting from selling those the Shemitah produce. So therefore you have Avodah Zarah and Shemitah, both where the monies that you get from it are getting the sanctity. That's why you can't learn out to any other area. But the Gemara asks, Ima Kodesh Tefes is Dama V'yetz L'chum, but then maybe you should say that if you're learning out this source of Halach of Shemitah from Kodshim, then you should say, just like by Kodshim, that yes, the sanctity of the carbon gets transferred to the monies, but V'yetz L'chum, the animal itself, which was forbidden up until now, is actually deconsecrated and is permitted. So Av Shviyas Tefes is Demeh V'yetz L'chum. So yes, so too Shemitah, that the monies get forbidden, but then the Shemitah produce itself should be permitted by Hanan now, shouldn't have any limitations as Shemitah produce. Tamalim, as the Pasuk teaches, that no, Shemitah actually has both stringencies. It says, Tia, it should be, which it says, Kodesh Tia Lechem. What does Tia mean? Baba Yosete, as we learn in many contexts throughout Shas, the word Havaya is actually Hashem's name, but it means existence. It is what it is, which is to say that it always retains that beingness of Shemitah produce, which no matter what you do, even if you transfer to the money, yes, the money will now get the sanctity, but the produce also retains its Shemitah sanctity. Ketzad, how so? So the Gemara explains, Lokach beperis shviyas basa. Let's say you take Shemitah produce, and you transfer it, you buy, you go to someone, you say, here's Shemitah produce, and he sells you a piece of meat. So elu ve'elu misbar b'shviyas. Now both of them have to be consumed within the limitations of the Shemitah year, which is the original peris shviyas, and now the meat that you was tefesa system out, which you got from the value of the Shemitah produce, which has that transfer. Now, however, the Gemara continues and says, but let's say bebasa dogim. Let's say now you take that meat and you continue your bartering. Now you buy fish with that meat that you got from the Shemitah produce. Then yatsa basa. Then actually now the meat actually is excluded now from the sanctity of the Shemitah produce, because it's only regarding the original peiros of Shviyas that we say tia, which is bavayasate, that it retains its original status. But what we call chilufehem, what you exchange for that, they actually could be removed to the state of chulin. So there the meat goes out. Now nichnasu dagam. Now the fish takes the place of the chilufeyan, of being typhus the damam of the original Shemitah produce. Now let's say bedagam yain. Let's say you take the fish and you buy wine with it. So yatsu dagam nichnas yain. So now the fish get excluded. No more limitation of Shemitah. And the wine takes the place. Let's say yain shemen. Now let's say you take the wine and you buy oil with it. So again, the same thing. Yatsu yain nichnas shemen. The wine gets excluded and the oil takes its place. So okay, so what's the conceptualization? So the Gemara explains, Acharin nitfes b'shviyas. The last one is the one that ends up taking the monetary value of the Shemitah produce within that limitations. And the priatzmai, and the fruit, meaning the original Shemitah produce itself, is also going to be aser not to leave it after the time of when it has to be consumed, where that never leaves its kedusha. So it has both of those limitations. It has the original, will always retain its status. And the chiluf, what you're exchanging it for, will also take it. But again, it's the last one of the whole chain that's going to retain that, because that's what you end up with, which is what's called tfisas damim. What you got out of Shemitah produce will also be forbidden, like we learned from Kodesh, what you transferred to will have that sanctity. So again, that's why we can't learn from it, and that's why all the halachas of our Mishnah, Isur Anah, will not be tfisas damim. Now the Gemara said, b'hanich lamanda amar e malamde. That works only very well according to the opinion, which we mentioned this machlokes many times, regarding that when you have two psukim saying the same idea, then you can't learn from it. But elamanda amar malamde ma'ikalamim, according to the opinion, which there is such an opinion that says that when you have two psukim saying the same idea, that you could learn from it. So what are you going to say? You should learn from Avodah Zarah and Shemitah, that just like over there, their taifas is damav, so too over here regarding all the halachas of our Mishnah. So then why, according to that opinion, could you be Mekadosh Isha with the money that you get out of selling these things, when they should be us about not too? The Gemara says, but mi utek sivi. Even if it's not because of the principle of Beis Kesum Abam Keachet, it's because both of those halachas of Avodah Zarah and Shemitah have exclusionary terms that saying it only applies here and nowhere else. Because Ksivach, it says over here by Avodah Zarah, ki cherim hu, because it is cherim. And the Ksivach says over there by Shemitah, yovel he, it is yovel, meaning he in, this yes, but midach rinilai, but other things not, and that's why it's excluding other halachas, and that's why if you sell all the things of our Mishnah, that what you get the money out of that will not have the limitations of Tfisas Damim, and that's why you could be Mekadosh Isha with those monies. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing the theme of the previous Mishnah, is regarding the monies that is used, the item that's used to be Mekadosh Isha. So the Mishnah tells us how Mekadosh Betrumas. If a man is Mekadosh a woman with Trumas, I mean, there's many different things that are called Truma. You have Chalal, you have the actual Truma, you have other things that are called Truma, Bikurim, Ube Maisris, or with giving her Maiser, the tithes, Ube Matanis, or certain gifts that Kahanim get, which are called the Zroya, the forearm, L'chayim, the cheeks, and the cave of the stomach, which is from any animal that Kahanim get these gifts, Ube Mechatas, or this is when there's a purification waters for somebody that becomes Tame, you take the Paraduma, the red heifer, you burn it, take the ashes, you mix it together with the water. So if you take, let's say, the water of the, it's called mechatas, which is the waters of the, which are used in this process of mayim chayim, the live waters, or be'efrachatas, you take the ashes of the paraduma. So either one of these items, if you give it to a woman, harezu mekadeshes, that will create a kedushin. There is a monetary value over here that she's getting, and that itself will be enough for kedushin. And says the Mishnah of Afil Yisra, and even if the man that's giving this to her is a non-kayin. Now, the assumption originally of what the Mishnah is trying to say over here is that even though he's Yisrael, and what does he have from the Truma and the Meiser, all he has is what's called Tevis Anah. He just has the benefit where he could decide which Kohen or Levi to give it to. And therefore, when he's giving that to the woman, he's also not giving her anything really, because she's not even getting married to a Kohen. She's not a Bas Kohen herself. All she has now is Tevis Anah. She can decide who to give it to, and maybe she'll get some benefit, some side benefit, kickbacks, or whatever it is, by which kind to give it to. So that sounds like, from the Mishnah, that's enough of being considered a monetary value to create a Kedushin, because Tevis Anah, it seems like, from our Mishnah, is Mammon, that is considered that it's a monetary value. Now, however, relating to this halacha itself, the Gemara opens up by saying, Amar Ula, he says, Tevis Anah ain't a Mammon. The benefit that you have of who to give a gift to, it doesn't have monetary value. So although really someone would say, you know, give it to my grandson, this truma, I'll pay you $100, you know, he's poor and he's not a popular kayin, that doesn't have monetary value itself, and therefore, says Ula, you cannot utilize that to Mekadosh Isha. Which Eisvi Rabba Ula, Rabba asks from our Mishnah seemingly contradicts this, as we just mentioned. The Mishnah says, a mekadesh b'trumas. If a man is mekadesh a woman with trumas, or b'maisres, or matanois, b'mechatas, or b'efapara, so we said, harizim u'kadeshes, and vafil Yisrael, even if he's a Yisrael, now what's he giving her if he's a Yisrael? Only the taibas and no, only the ability to decide which kind to give it to, or which labor to give it to, and yet we see obviously that it's considered mammon because a woman's being mekadeshes with that. So that seemingly is a clear refutation of Ula. So Malay Ula says to him, no. Hacha b'Yisrael, when we're talking about Yisrael, we're talking about a non-Kayin. Shenafel lo tevalim mibeis avi'imoi Kayin. He actually inherited this trumas or maises or whatever these things are that go to Kahanim. He inherited from his grandfather. Now, how is his grandfather Kayin and he's Yisrael? Because his mother married his father who was a non-Kayin. But his mother's father was a Kayin. Now, he inherited this. Now, moreover, because Savar, the Tana of our Mishnah holds, matonish lo hurmu, the gifts which were not yet separated, meaning every tevel, every untithed produce, somewhere in there, there's truma, maaser, just wasn't separated yet. Tanna of Mishnah holds that even though it wasn't separated, kimisha homer damin, it's as if it was already separated. Now, since it was ready to be separated and the work was finished, you just had to separate it. So essentially, the kohen, his grandfather, already merited it in that truma. Although it wasn't yet separated, but it's kemisha homer, it's like it was already separated, and therefore he could hold on to his own trumas and maestras. So, since the only thing he had to do was actually separate it, his grandson who inherits it from him also could just separate it, and he could sell it to the kohen because he actually owns it. It's not just tevis anah that he could decide who to go to, but he doesn't own it like a regular Yisrael. He owns it, and therefore what he's giving to the woman is actual ownership of the trumas and maestras. Now, she can't eat it because she's not a kohen, but she could sell it, and she gets the full value because it's something that she owns. Now, Rashi just points out that really the Gemara could have answered that the case of our Mishnah is talking about, that he doesn't inherit Tevel, and then to say this whole Chiddush of that, even though it wasn't separated yet, but his grandfather really had the right in that Trumas and Maestas, because it's like as if it was separated, could have just said that he inherited Truma from his grandfather, who's a Kohen. And therefore he owns the Truma, and therefore, yes, he's giving his Kala a Truma, he's giving her something that he owns, On that, however, Rashi says, but the difficulty then would have been that what would be the chiddush of our Mishnah when it says, Avafuli be Yisrael, of course should be engaged because he owns the Truma. Therefore, when it says Avafuli Yisrael, it's coming to say this added chiddush of that even though he didn't inherit Truma at all, he inherited just Tevel. So it's just Tevel, so where do you see Trumas and Mises? You inherited Tevel. Now, Tevel, you have to separate Trumas and Mises. Oh, now that goes to the Kayin. And I was saying that, no, since his grandfather was a Kayin who owned this Tevel, and even though the gifts weren't separated, it's as if they were separated, as if there's Truma there already, which therefore he got the rights to that already. When his grandson gets it, he gets the whole ownership, and therefore there's not just Tevel and Noah who you can decide who it goes to, but you don't really own it. He actually owned it, and therefore that's a monetary thing to give to a kala. But again, Ula's position is not refuted because the Tevis Ano itself is not a mammon. Here is the actual Trumas and Maisa that he owns. Now, continuing on this theme, the Gemara tells us, Rav Huna asked from Rav Huna this exact question. Tevis Ano a mammon or in a mammon? When you don't own something, but you get to decide where it goes to, is that considered money? Is there a dollar value on that? And hence you could utilize it as in Kedushin or not? So Rav Huna said to him, what do you mean, Tinesu? We learned this in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, Makadish b'chumas b'maisim atanis b'mechadis b'yifapar ha-reizu m'kudashes v'afil Yisrael. And even the Yisrael, what do you mean Yisrael? What does he have? He's not a Kayin, he can't eat Truma. Oh, because Tevis is not his mamon. So Reb Chiya Bar Rabban said to him, what do you mean? V'lava kimna, didn't we establish that the case of our Mishnah is not a Yisrael that has his own Tevel and the Trumas and Maestras that he has to give to a Kayin, which is the Tevis and all, that's what he's using? Rather, we're talking about, as Ula had said, B'Yisrael sh'nafalei tefalim e'beis avi'im ha'kayin. He actually owns it. It's not just the rights of it, where it could go. He inherited from his grandfather, that's a Kayin. So how are you proving from there that Tevis and all is mamon? Says Rukhtin Tamid Beis, Amalei, Rav Huna said to him, Hutsat, you're someone that's on the outside. Now, Ichsef, he was embarrassed. Husav, he thought, Mishmaita Kamalei. He thought that regarding the learning, he's on the outside. In other words, you're excluded from this learning. In other words, it seems like you're not so intelligent. That's what he thought. So he was embarrassed. Or another interpretation is that it was coming from the terminology of what's called Hutsa Badafna. As the Gemara Sukkah says, it's terminology of branches, which he thought as elsewhere in Shas, it's used in a little bit of a denigrating terminology of Katl Kani Ba'agmat, that you're some type of a wood chopper. Like, in other words, like you're not so intelligent, you're not so learned. That's where the word hutza could be of a branch. He thought he was denigrating him in regarding that you're not so familiar with learning. So Amalei, when he sort of got embarrassed, he says, no, hachik, I mean, that's what I was saying. You didn't say anything wrong. Rav Asi, the hutzel koi kavaseich. When I said you're a hutza, you like this Rav Asi, who's from hutzel, which is similar, that he's like you. Yes, you're right. According to the way, and Ula said the same thing, that they interpret the Mishnah, then you're right. I wouldn't have a proof that Tevis and Noah is mammon, because they say it's not a regular Yisrael with his own Trumas and Maises that he has only Tevis and Noah. It's that he inherited from his grandfather, who then he does have the actual money itself, and therefore then you're right. It wouldn't be a raya that Tevis and Noah is mammon. The Gemara continues and says, Nemi Kitanoi. Let's say actually that this question, if Tevis and Noah is mammon or not, is a machlokes tanoi, as learned in the following Braisa. The Braisa says, Hagoinev Tivli Shel Chaver. If someone steals the tevel, the untithed produce of his friend, in other words, his friend just finished gleaning his field and doing everything, they didn't take off anything yet, and someone steals it. So it's a machlokes. The first opinion says, Mishalmloi Dimei Tivli Shel Chaveroi Divi Rebbe. Rebbe says that when he has to pay him back, has to pay back the whole value of that whole tevel. In other words, not just what he would get out of it, his own chulin, but even the value of the truma, the value of the maisa, which this owner wouldn't be getting it anyways. He has to give it to the kohen, to the levi. He has to pay him back all of that. That's what Rebbe says. Rebbe says, no, ein mishalom el demei chulin shabai. He only pays him back the value of the chulin, what he would have ended up with after he would have taken up trumas and maisas. But the trumas and maisas, he could tell him, what's called in law terminology, lav bal devarim didiyad. You're not my litigant. What do you mean? What have to do with you? You don't, it's not your trumas and maisas. Yes, you have to give it to the kohen and levi, but it's not yours. And therefore, I don't have to pay you back because you're not my litigant. You can't come to claim that for me. Now, when the kohen would come and claim and say, okay, so you have our truma, he would push him away and says, no, I don't want to give it to you. I want to give it to another kohen. And someone else comes, I don't want to give it to you. I want to give it to someone else. And therefore, he wouldn't have to compensate for the theft of the trumas and maisas. That's the machlokes. Do you have to pay back for the trumas and maisas value or not? So the Gemara says, "My lab bal kemifliki." Isn't this what they're arguing about? The marasavar tayves ana mamon, that Rebbe holds that the tayves ana, the fact that you could decide which kohen or which labor to give the trumas and maisis to, that has a monetary value to the owner. And therefore Rebbe says you got him paying back the trumas and maisis too, because the fact that he gives a gift to a certain kohen, that has value to him. That you're taking away from him now. So you got to compensate him for that. Who holds that? No, Tevis is not in a moment. No, that's not considered monetary value. And therefore, I don't have to give you back anything. I didn't steal anything from you in that regard. So similarly, this is their machlekes. So the Gemara says, Loi, and the Gemara has many different interpretations how to interpret their machlekes, that it doesn't have to be necessarily that they're disagreeing regarding this principle if you say Tevis is moment or not. First interpretation, the Gemara says, the Kuli Alma Tevis is not in a moment. Truthfully, we can say that they both hold that there is no monetary value for Tevis and not. Yeah, you get it's good, you're giving to the kohen, but that doesn't have a monetary value. Now, if that's the case, how do we understand the opinion of Rebbe? Why does then he have to compensate him all of it, even the Trumas and Maisis? So the reason is because Bahacha here in this case is Pitvalim Shenufalim Beis Avim Kain. This is exactly like the case how we described the case in the Mishnah, where everyone would agree that it does have a monetary value, because here we're talking about that he inherited this tevel from his grandfather, that's a kohen. Now, so what's their machlokes? What they are arguing about is regarding when you have gifts inside the tevel which weren't separated yet, do we consider them as separate yet or not? Where Marsav, a Rebbe held Kemisho Homer Damian, they're as if they already separated. Therefore, his grandfather, his mother's father, had already merited in the Trumas and Maestris. Now, why Maestris? Is because as Rashi brings down, that after Ezra penalized the Levim because they didn't show up, that actually the Kohanim started getting the Maestris. So it's regarding that point that they dispute, because Rebbe holds that all those gifts were already, it's actually he owns it, as we explained in the interpretation in the Mishnah, and therefore, of course, if he's stealing from this Tevel, Trumas and Maestris, yes, he's stealing from this Yisrael, because he actually owns the Trumas and Maestris. Whereas Amar Sovel, Lav Kamish Homer Damen, but Rabbi Yehuda held that no, it's not like it's separated already. And therefore, actually, this inheritor, when he then goes and separates it, it's only now becoming Trumas and Maestris, which means to say, when his grandfather owned it, he didn't yet merit it because it wasn't yet Trumas and Maestris. So he would have to give it to the Kayan, and therefore all he would have would be Tevis and Noah. And again, as we're saying in this interpretation, both opinions would hold that Tevis and Noah is not Mammon, and that's why that's their machlik is regarding a different principle, regarding if Matana Shlohormu Aka Hormu Damian. That's one interpretation. Biboy Sema, if you want, you could say a different interpretation. The Kula Alma Kemisha Hormu Damian. We could say that no, both agree that even gifts which weren't separated yet are like they were separated. And moreover, they agree with Tevis and Noah in a Mammon, that the rights that you have where to go does not give it a monetary value. Now, so what are they disagreeing about? So here, actually, then it's not like the first interpretation. It's not talking about we inherited from his mother's father, that's a kain. Rather, it grew in his own land. So what's their machlekes? But the Shmuel Kamefuki, they're disagreeing regarding Shmuel's halacha. Dama Shmuel said, chita achas by teres sakri. Shmuel said, although we know in Truma, generally you're supposed to give 1/50th, or not less than 1/40th, and not more than 1/60th necessarily, he holds that if you take one kernel of wheat, it will exempt the whole pile of your produce for the halachas of Truma. Now, based on that, we can understand the machlokes. The bar is laid to Shmuel. Rebbe held like the halach of Shmuel, and therefore, the owner of the tevel could tell to the ganav that all that produce, which you don't want to pay me back because, oh, that you would have to give to the kohen, and that you have to give to Levi, that's actually all mine. Because I could have exempted myself from Truma with one little drop. I know generally I would give 1/40th, but 1/40th of my crop, you can't tell me you don't have to give me back, because I technically could have exempted myself with one little part, and then you have to give me all that back. Now Rashi points out that obviously then that what according to this interpretation, what Rebbe's disputing with Rabbi Yisrael Yehuda must be only on Truma. Because regarding Meiser, then obviously he would agree that he could say Lav Bal Devarm Didiat, because regarding Meiser, you have to give a tenth. You can't give less than a tenth. And therefore, 1/10 of it, he wouldn't have to give back to that owner who he stole the tablet from, because that has nothing to do with you. You have to give that to Levi. And then Levi could say, I don't want to give it to you. I would have given to another Levi. But it's regarding Truma that they're disputing. Where Rebbe holds like Shmuel, Umar, less like the Shmuel. But Rebbe Yisrael Yehuda doesn't hold like Shmuel. And therefore, even by Truma, he couldn't come and claim that you have to give it back to me, because he doesn't agree that you could give just one little drop. You would have to give the 40th or whatever it is, the 50th. And therefore, he could exempt himself and say, La bat varm the diat, even under Truma. Now, or if you want, you could say, The Kulama less Lahud Shmuel. Actually, they both disagree with Shmuel. And you can't just say, I would have given just one little kernel. Now, so how do we understand Rebbe? Why does Rebbe hold that he has to give it back? Why does he have to give it back if Lav Bal Dvarim D'Diyat? It's because the Kunsu Rabbanan Leganav is because the rabbis, according to Rebbe, penalized the thief. In other words, we don't want the Truma to remain with money that has no claimants, because essentially he could tell everyone, no, you're not my claimant. The original owner, he could say, you're not my claimant because it's not your truma. You don't hold like, no one holds like Shmuel. You have to give this to the kain. And the kain, he could say, well, maybe I would give it to a different kain. And he's going to end up gaining that. That is what's called chikdei niska. A sinner is going to end up gaining because what he stole, he's not going to have to return. And because we don't want that, therefore we say that you have to return all of it to the original owner. Or if you want, you can say the other way around. The kula alma is lahu d'shmul. Everyone agrees to Shmuel that really you could have exempted yourself with one drop, and hence, therefore, you should really have to give it all back, like Rebbe said. So how do we understand Rebbe Yisrael Rebbe Yehuda? Because of Hacha, in the time of Rebbe Yisrael Rebbe Yehuda is the Kansur Rabban al-Labala Bayis. He says an interpretation the other way around, that we penalize the homeowner. He should not have held on that his produce should have been and remained in the state of Tevel. And because you didn't quickly take care of it and separate Trumas and Mises, now when it was stolen, you have this loss, and we penalize you because you shouldn't have left it in the state of Tevel, and that's why he doesn't have to go ahead and compensate you for that amount of the Truma that you would have given, even though you could have exempted yourself really with that one little Chita, but now, once he stole it, he doesn't have to give you back that amount. Now the Gemara goes back to one of the items mentioned in our Mishnah to ask on that Halacha. The Gemara says, now we learned in our Mishnah, as we said before, Hamakadish betrumas, if a man engages a woman with truma, ubemaisris, with maiser, ubematanis, bemechatas, with the chatas water, which is the water that they take mayim chayim to use together with ubeifah par, or if he takes the ashes of the paraduma, and he gives it to the woman, says the Mishnah, reason mukadashas, she's going to be engaged. Vava pi yisrael, as we said, even if it's a yisrael, as we worked that out, either because Tavis and Noz Mammon, or because he actually owns it. Now, but it's regarding those two items of mechatas and efer chatas that it works as kedushin that the Gemara says bavirminu seems to be a contradiction from Mishnah Masechtas Becheiris. The Mishnah says hanoitel schar ladun. If someone takes pay, he gets benefit from adjudicating a court case. Dina betelim, his court cases are void. Let's say lahayid. Let's say he gets paid to say testimony. Eduse betela. His testimony is void. Lahazis, let's say he gets paid, he gets some type of value out of spraying the mechatas, or the meaning it takes the combination of the ash of waters and sprays it on the tummy person, or ulakadish, or he gets some benefit out of sanctifying the mechatas. In other words, that's when you put the actual ashes into the water, that's the process of sanctifying those waters, that's called the kiddush. Then meimav meima'ara, then his water are cave waters, means to say they're like putrid waters. The Efaroi Efer Miklan, and his ashes is like ash from an oven. In other words, that there's no value to that. In other words, you're doing something highly inappropriate because this is a mitzvah you have to be performing, either judging a court case, saying testimony, being mazer or being mekadesh, the mechatas or the Efer chatas. So we see clearly from the Mishnah Maseches Becheiros that you're not supposed to get any benefit from the mechatas and the Efer chatas. So how can we say in our Mishnah that you could get benefit out of it, and moreover, you could create a kedushin from it when it's something that's forbidden to have anah from? So my bias is loikash. It's not a difficulty. Khan, our Mishnah is talking about bischar hava, that there is benefit to be had from the mechatas and the efrachatas, is when you bring the ashes from place to place, or imiloi, filling up the water, where that's just something that takes effort. Now, the Torah didn't say that that's part of the mitzvah process. It's just some part of the technical components you have to do that you're allowed to get paid for. And hence, it's that component, what he's giving to the woman, that will create the kedushin. Khan over here in the Mishnah Masechtas Becheiros that says, you're not allowed to have anah from it, is b'schar hazov v'kiddush, is the reward for the actual spraying or the sanctification, which is not an effort. It's an effortless process. Now, therefore, the only pay you'll be getting wouldn't be going for what's called schar tircha, and this is the same similar procedure that happens with teaching Torah to other people, where you're not going to get paid for teaching Torah. Same thing is for the teaching and the procedure of a mitzvah itself. The Torah says, re'eh lamadati eschem. Hashem says, look, what did I do? I taught you Torah for free. And so do you have to teach Torah for free? And that goes together with the same thing about the instructions and the following through of a mitzvah process. That is where the Mishnah Bechorah is saying that you're not allowed to get schar. You have to judge, you have to testify, you have to be mazah or put in the ashes. That's not something of effort. So the only pay you'd be getting would be for the fulfillment of the mitzvah. That you not take pay for. And says the Gemara, Dekenami. A precise reading in our Mishnah indicates that the schar that you're getting, in other words, the monetary value that there is that you're giving over to the woman for kedushin, is not going on the spraying or on the kiddush. That's actually forbidden. Because the Ketanei Hacha, what did we learn in our Mishnah? B'mei chatas u'be'eifa par, it said them individual. It was talking about either, and that's why we understand now, why did they individuate them, separate them? Because they're not mixed yet. The ashes are separate, the water is separate. That, therefore, obviously not doing the hazah or the kiddush, which is the process of putting them together, in those things, that is something that's permitted to go ahead and get paid for, because those are effort, technical things which you're allowed to get paid for. Whereas the Ketanei Hasim, there in the Mishnah, Masechtas Bechorot is also meduyik, where it says, Lahadis ulekadish. What is it that says you're not allowed to get paid for, you're not allowed to get benefit from the spraying or the kiddush, where that's the actual mitzvah performance, Shema Minah, therefore Abaye has resolved the contradiction from our Mishnah and that Mishnah. Our Mishnah that says you could get benefit is talking about the tircha part, and there's talking about the actual mitzvah fulfillment part, which you're not allowed to get any benefit from. Hanulach Ish Mekadosh, which we shall return to, the second paragraph of Masechtas Kedushin, Perek Ish Mekadosh. And with that, we begin the third paragraph of Masechtas Kedushin, Perek Ha'emer. And like the namesake of the Perek is the first Mishnah, it talks about things that relating to a Kedushin are verbal components that happen. Now, specifically, the halachas of our Mishnah will discuss regarding when two men are trying to get married to one woman. And it opens up with this idea about Ha'emer, someone that says, L'chaveri. So it's something regarding the Kedushin that he's telling someone. He tells his friend, Save kadesh li isha plainis. Do me a favor, go ahead and engage that woman for me. Now, v'holach v'kitch la'atzmai. He's on his way and he sees, that's a girl I would like to get married to. And he instead gets engaged to her himself and not for the guy who sent him. Says the Mishnah Mukadesh, l'sheni. She's engaged to the second guy, not to the guy who had sent him to get engaged her to him. She's engaged to the guy who actually did the kedushin for himself. So to v'cheinu oima le'isha. If someone tells a woman, hariat mukadesh li la'achar shleishem yoyim. Behold, you're engaged to me after 30 days. Now somebody else comes within those 30 days and gets engaged to her. She's engaged to the second guy because the first guy's condition is only taking effect after 30 days. And here she's engaged within those 30 days to someone else. So she's engaged to the second guy. Therefore, says the Mishnah, Bas Yisrael, a kohen. If let's say she was a Bas Yisrael, her father was not a kohen, and this second guy that she's getting engaged to within the 30 days is a kohen, so techa b'truma. She's engaged to him, and she could even need truma. She's totally engaged to him, not to the guy who had said, let it take effect after 30 days. Now, however, let's say the first guy said, it should take effect after 30 days, but rather, me'ach shebel achash leishem yom. It should take effect from now and after 30 days. And now someone else comes within those 30 days and engages her. Says the Mishnah, now it's mukadeshes ve'ena mukadeshes. She's engaged, but not engaged to both of them. And therefore she's actually forbidden to both, unless if one of them comes along and gives a get, and actually for another person besides those two, she'll actually be forbidden until both of them give a get. Now the Gemara will explain exactly what is the differentiation over here? And what's the understanding of this halacha? What does it mean from now and after 30 days? What does it mean she's engaged and not engaged to both of them and regarding her, the procedural outcomes? Now, but one thing that the Mishnah does say is therefore, since it's Mukadeshes v'ene Mukadeshes, she's yes engaged and not engaged to both of them. So let's say Bas Yisrael a Kayin. Let's say she's her father's not a Kayin. And the second guy that engages her within the 30 days is a Kayin. So as our Mishnah will conclude, she cannot eat Truma, because maybe the Kedushin of the second guy is not a Kedushin, as we're saying, because it is, but it's not. Oy Bas Kayin Li Yisrael, or let's say the second guy is the Yisrael and she's a Bas Kayin, there too, Loi Teicha B'Truma. She's also not allowed to eat Truma, meaning from the Truma of her father's household, because maybe the second guy's Kedushin is a Kedushin, and when a Bas Kayin gets married, gets engaged to a non-Kayin, that engagement invalidates a Bas Kayin from consuming Truma, so therefore it's actually getting the worst of both. We're here, we're not sure, is it a Kedushin of the second guy or not, so therefore whether he's a Kayin, she's not allowed to because maybe it's not a Kedushin, and if he's a non-Kayin and she is a Bas Kayin, she's also not allowed to eat Truma because maybe it is a Kedushin, and because there's Mukadesh and Mukadeshes, either way, she's not allowed to eat Truma.